I'm going to read a few select chapters from Nehemiah this evening. I was told about 4.5 hours ago that I would be opening services. And I'm going to just sort of retell the story. This is a very simple, kind of straightforward story, and it's full of focus. It's full of pictures of focus and dedication to the things of God. And I think it's a story that even the younger ones can get their minds around. It's a story about a man, a servant of God, who took it upon himself to rebuild a wall. And our story opens in chapter 1, which I titled The Problem, or The Wall. So the story opens up in Shushan. This is where Nehemiah is. He's in the palace. And his friend, it says, one of his brethren came up to him. Today we shorten that to bro, or even kind of slang it even more. But I think it's a good friend of his, or a close friend. One of his brethren came up to him, and Nehemiah asked him about, he asked him two things. He asked him about the people of God, the captivity situation, and then he asks concerning Jerusalem. So the first thing I took away from Nehemiah is that his mind is on the affairs of God. When Nathan and I get together, usually the first thing I cover is kind of what's been going on in my life. But I think about Sister Nadine and how we read a letter from her occasionally from service to service. And it's just an evidence that her mind is on the things of God. She's concerned with the church and she's concerned about God's people. So Nehemiah had the same mindset, and he asked his friend, who was honest enough to tell him exactly what was going on. He told him about the captivity, and then he says, and this is the wall here that the story is about. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. So this is the problem, is the wall of Jerusalem. And I think to better get an idea of what a problem this is, you have to think about a wall and what it does. Our nation doesn't necessarily have a wall around it, but in times before, a city or a palace was protected by a wall. It was the front line of defense. I think a church has a wall. I think we as individuals have a spiritual wall. It's like where the buck stops. I listen to music. I listen to a lot of music. But there is some music that I will not listen to. It encroaches upon the wall. Hopefully, I will not listen to it. They're the same thing for movies or things like that. I think we have a wall. So imagine you're on a hilltop, and you open up your spyglass and you look down upon this city. It's got this wall around it, and there's a battle going on. Okay, and the wall is super strong. I was reading about some medieval walls years and years ago. Some of them were like 16, 20, 30 feet thick. They're huge, huge walls. So imagine you're looking down at this battle, and there's this wall, and it's super, super strong. And the gate is just slammed shut. Maybe something like in Braveheart. And the enemy is just throwing themselves against the wall to no avail. And you might think, man, the people inside that wall, they've got it made. Their wall is super, super strong. They're not going anywhere. And woe to the attackers. They're safe behind their strong wall and their strong gate. And imagine you look down again, maybe it's a different battle, maybe it's a day later, and the wall is broken down. And there's rubble. Maybe it's starting to fall. And the gates are burning with fire. They're not going to hold up much longer. And you might think, your heart might go out to the defenders who have lost their wall. And you might think, oh, they're going to get overrun. They're going to get slaughtered. Because once the wall is gone, the defense is gone. And that's like the first step. They might retreat back to the keep, but they've lost their first footing. I think a lot of times, I know myself, I make compromises in decisions, like the music I'll listen to, or compromises in my spiritual life. I don't necessarily just open up the gates and let the enemy come in. That would be foolish. But I make compromises, and it's just as if my wall is breaking down. And before you know it, I'll retreat to my keep. And some people, even we hear tragic stories, who just kind of open up their keep doors, maybe. The keep is like the final fortress. So you look down, and maybe, though, you're looking at this situation, and the wall is broken down, the gates are burning, the defenders are losing, but maybe you're for the attacking team, and you're really happy, and you're excited. And this kind of gives me chill bumps, but this is what I think about. I think this is the mindset that the demons and the devils have when they look at our country today, and they look at maybe some of our churches or even some of our individual lives, and they're excited because our wall is broken down, and they're celebrating because they know when the wall has come down, that's the first step to invasion. So you can just let your minds run with the spiritual applications of a wall. But Nehemiah, it hit him hard. He was very caught up in the things of God. And it came to pass in verse 4 of chapter 1, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And he goes on to pray. He says he prays, he wept and mourned certain days. He's already kind of a man of direction and purpose. So Nehemiah prays to God in chapter 2, which I've labeled the solution. Nehemiah takes it upon himself to fix the wall. So he is the king's cupbearer. He goes before the king Xerxes, and his countenance is sad. He's frowning. His heart is heavy because he's thinking about the walls which are broken down and the gate that's burned up with fire. And the king notices, and the king says, "Why are you sad?" And he explains the story to the king. And he requests of the king in chapter 2 that he can go down and tend to the wall and rebuild the wall. But Nehemiah, and I think of parallel people even in our church, like our deacons and strong members of our church, that I won't try to mention names because I know I'll leave people out. But he's focused and he has a mindset for the future. What if Nehemiah went down to repair the wall and he got everybody stirred up and he said, "Let's rebuild this wall." And they looked at him and they're like, "With what? You know, we don't have any wood." Nehemiah foresaw the problem. He asked the king, "King, I need to go rebuild the wall. Also, can you send a letter to the keeper of the forest so I can have timber to rebuild the wall?" So Nehemiah is thinking ahead. He's just a sober mind. And he's very, very, very focused. And the letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gate of the palace. And it says, "And the king granted me according to the good God, to the good hand of my God upon me." It reminds me of the verse in Proverbs 20, "The king's heart is in the hand of God." Nehemiah knew that the bucks didn't stop with the king. It stopped with God. God is sovereign. God controls everything. And you'll notice throughout this book that Nehemiah is constantly going back to God. He never loses focus of God in the story. The king grants it to him. Nehemiah rose in the night in verse 12 of chapter 2, and he takes off on this this mission to repair the walls. He left with he left in the night. "Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon," when he left. So I took from this, I may be looking into this the wrong way, but a lot of times I have a goal to do, and I think, I'll do a few other things as I'm headed that way. And it just lessens the focus of the original goal. Who knows, there might have been some great fishing holes or hiking trails that Nehemiah might have wanted to hit up on his way down to the wall. I don't know. But he didn't have a pack mule. He took only what he needed to accomplish the wall. He's very, very focused. He gets down to the wall, and his excitement and his drive is spread amongst all the people. In verse 18, towards the end of chapter 2, he tells the people of Jerusalem, "Hey, we're going to rebuild the wall." I remember hearing Jimmy Fulmer preach, I think here, maybe his church. And Noah's here. And he said, "Attitudes are contagious." And then he kind of leaned and he said, "Is yours worth catching?" And it's kind of funny, but it's very, very true. Nehemiah's zeal was very, very contagious. Because verse 18, he says, "Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words, which he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands to do this good work." Every time I rake leaves in the fall, the first time I rake leaves, I get a blister right here. And I think of the amount of manual labor it takes to rebuild the wall. His foresight was contagious. They foresaw this hard work, and they strengthened their hands for this good work. So this is a really good start to this story about Nehemiah rebuilding the wall. He's excited, he has drive, he has focus, and he has spread the same goals to the people around him. Chapter 3 is titled The Work. Chapter 3 is a picture. It's like a panning camera along the wall, and it shows a team building the wall, and it says who they are and what they're working on, and it goes to the next person next to him, and next to them repaired, and next to him, and next to him, and after him, and after him, and next to him. It's a picture of the unified people repairing the wall. And then comes chapter 4. And this is like, chapter 4 is like 2 weeks after the July meeting, when you've gotten on your spiritual high, but then things get normal. Chapter 4, I entitled, The Struggle. Because you're wondering, like, I mean, what could go wrong? They've got all this zeal, they got all this passion. Man, they're just going to build the wall. And sometimes that's how I feel right after a meeting. It's incredible how the devil foresees these things, and he jumps right in to distract and to bother. So chapter 4, and there's this guy named Sanballat. He's a real pain. He comes up several times. It says, but it came to pass that when Sanballat had heard we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he said unto them, what do these feeble Jews do? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make the end of a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish which are burned? So the builders, I think this is the first wave of attacks, are starting to get mocked by people. But they haven't lost focus yet. They haven't realized where their strength comes from. Verse 4, they go straight to God in prayer. They say, Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them prey in the land of captivity. So then in verse 6, so we build the wall. They pray, and they get right back to work. So we build the wall, and all the wall was joined together into the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. They're focused. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and others had heard these things, they hit him again. It's like the verse in the Bible that says, let aside every weight and the sin that does so easily beset us, so we can run with patience. They're just being constantly bombarded with evil to stop the work of God. These people are conspiring, all of them together, to come down and fight against Jerusalem, to hinder it. That's their purpose, is to hinder the work of God. This is fantastic right here in verse 9. Because imagine you're building the wall, and these people, first they kind of taunt you. But you win that victory. You go to God and you win that victory. But now they're conspiring to fight against you. Now it comes down to like physical pain. They're really going to bring the heat. Fight against Jerusalem with the purpose of hindering the rebuilding of the wall. And verse 9 says, nevertheless, like it doesn't even matter. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto God. And we set a watchman day and night because of them. They turned right back to God. And they didn't just pray. They didn't just stop the work and be like, let's not upset these people. Let's pray about it. And if it's the will of God, you know, for these people to go away, then he'll work out his will. You know, we'll just wait until it goes away and we won't have to worry about anything. No, they prayed to God. And then they set a watch. They did something about it. It goes down. Let me make sure I'm on cue with my notes here. We're still in chapter 4, the struggle. Yeah. He goes down to verse 14, and I looked and I rose up and I said to the nobles, Nehemiah is encouraging the people, remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your house. He's inspiring them. And it came to pass when our enemies had heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we all returned, all of us, to the wall, and everyone to his work. So God is protecting them in this battle and battle. So chapter 5 and 6, I'm just going to title Temptation, and then the completion of the wall. I hope this is at least an exciting story. Chapter 6, I think Sanballat is realizing that maybe taunting or threatening isn't getting the job done. He wants to hinder the wall, so he goes to Nehemiah and he starts to tempt him. He says, he sent a message unto me saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they sought to do me mischief. I do projects all the time, and there are just distractions. There's things that just keep you from the Word of God, maybe. Things that keep you from going about the business of God. But he saw that this was a distraction. He said, and I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work. He's the king's cupbearer. He's not like a mighty man of David. He's not leading a huge army and conquering a city. He's just rebuilding a wall. And I don't think it's the rebuilding of the wall, the actual structure that's so great to Nehemiah. I think it's the fact that it's the work he's doing for God. He says, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come to you? God is more important than the little things in our life. It's like maybe there's a chance for you to witness to someone, and then you get a phone call saying, hey, we're going to watch a movie tonight, or something as basic as that. And so Nehemiah sees the temptation. He says, no, I'm doing a great work. I'm going to stay focused. Verse 19, for they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work that it is not done. And Nehemiah says, now therefore, O God, as if this is the problem, oh, my hands will be weak. I'll pray to God. O God, strengthen my hands. He goes to God with every particular need in order to get this wall done. And then towards the end, it came to pass, I lost the verse. I think it's in chapter 6. Anyway, it took 52 days to rebuild the wall. I don't know how big the wall is. I think that's impressive. But it's a story of someone who was very focused, someone who took it upon himself to do the work of God and saw it through to completion despite the temptations and the distractions and the hindrances and the weights that were constantly barbed upon him, because he turned his focus constantly to God, where his strength and his help was come from, and he completed the work in 52 days. He's an example of a very focused, dedicated, it's a short story, but I got a lot from it. I think it's practical lessons we could all use.